You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
From New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from my apartment in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn. I am Andrew Wiebe, with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Kaylin Carr, Matt Doyle. Big week! Huge week! Massive week! Audi 2020 MLS Cup playoffs week, boys. Smile. Kaylin, you're on the West Coast. It's like the crack of dawn, and you're still emoting for us. You're still showing that happiness. What a week it is. And oh, by the way, there's some news. What are you guys doing in March? Anybody know? Probably still wearing your masks.
Yeah, probably just sitting in my apartment
Always doing the right thing, staying safe, keeping those that you love safe from COVID-19, though we do have some good news on that front. The other news here is Deputy Commissioner Mark Abbott here at MLS said early March return to play. So mark your calendars there, but in the meantime, Friday, the playing games in the Eastern Conference, New England, Montreal, Nashville, Miami, FS1, ESPN2, 6:30 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Eastern. Mark those down. Figure out how you're going to watch them, what you're going to eat, what you're going to drink, who you're going to do it with, maybe virtually. Set up that Zoom, whatever it is you use.
Might be a chili situation. November, going into Thanksgiving, this might be a slow cooker chili sitch.
Yeah, it's even more. Yeah, I mean, if you were with a bunch of people, you'd want to avoid. But since you'll be by yourself.
No, I'm just going to eat the whole thing by myself.
Just rip away.
Healthy,
just
baby. Healthy.
Handle that business.
What do you currently stoller charging just to get ready?
Wait a minute, do you do beef chili or do you do
turkey? Ground turkey. Or a veggie. Yeah. I like a good like quinoa sweet potatoes with a bunch of beans.
Stop it. Okay, stop it.
Can I just say this? And I think it's the Midwesterner in me. I am vehemently, you know, as a part of my like core being and my values, against substituting ground turkey in places that ground beef should be used. Like, it's not the same. I won't be convinced that it's the same. My wife can probably hear me in the other room saying this and is groaning and rolling her eyes, but it just will never be the same.
Tell Mindy that I'll make a fantastic turkey substitute bolognese to bring to your funeral in like 7 years when you die of high cholesterol.
Oh, boy. Let me get a
pipe cleaner real quick to clean out these veins. All right, let's get into it, boys. Let's get into it. We got breaking news, exclusive right here. You heard it first on Extra Time. Guess who has the post-game show for all of the playoffs up until the conference finals?
Is it Chris Caron?
Yes, it is producer Chris Caron doing even more work. Pump your fists, jump up and down, folks. Extra Time has been given the honor. It is a prestige move by MLSsoccer.com and all the associated properties, as some fans might say, effing hack MLS Digital has given us the honor of being the official post-game show all the way up until it really matters.
AK, everyone was like, Fridays, the weekend, Thanksgiving week.
Yeah.
Extra
Doesn't
time
that feel a little bit just like giving up a little bit? Like, that's just,
it's like when
whatever,
we say,
like,
when we're like, yo, play your kids. But then the coach is like, I don't care about this game, so I'm just going to play youth kids. And we're out here like, whoa, play your kids. This team
rocks. It's like the opposite of that, actually.
I felt good about it. I felt really good about it. So everywhere, every MLS channel you can imagine, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, MLSsoccer.com, the MLS app, some I may be forgetting, but probably I'm not. That's where it'll be immediately after all the games. Jump over there. We will do our normal thing. It will be not. It'll be us.
Normal thing as in like you can have a bottle?
I was going to ask you guys. I have it right here on the rundown.
Late are these matches?
Yeah. Well, you're talking 11 p.m. Eastern on that Friday night. Nashville, Miami will end on Saturday. I guess that one is in the afternoon, so it's 5 p.m.
And Kaylin, you've been migrating west during this whole COVID epidemic, so you'll probably end up in Hawaii for the playoffs. So it would actually be pretty early for you. I would suggest Irish coffee is what I'm saying.
It's an MLS is back situation. Kaylin's watching the first playoff game at 9 a.m. each day.
Yes.
To get it started.
I love morning MLS. I'm going to get it back somehow.
Kalen's going to move to South Korea so he can have MLS games when
just
he wakes.
Budget in that afternoon nap for you. Have a drink or two and just lay right down and go to sleep. We will, I don't know if we should.
They play by our rules. You know, you sign up, you get the whole thing. It comes with the whole package.
I'm here for it. Look, we will talk about the Eastern Conference on Thursday. We were talking to Steve Zakwani today, by the way, about the West. We will also preview those Toronto TBD, Philadelphia TBD games that'll depend on the play-in round, as well as LAFC Seattle in a little bit more depth next Monday, so it'll be more relevant at that time. But before we get there, we have seven games before next Monday, seven games to soak in the playoff atmosphere and the stakes and the single elimination excitement. First of all, go get in your Audi 2020 MLS Cup Playoffs Bracket Challenge. Second of all, what game are you guys looking forward to most? What's the one right now as you look forward and you start to feel the cool in the air? It gets a little chilly. You're wearing your nice fall jacket and you're thinking it's playoff time, Doyle. Mm-hmm. What are you looking forward to?
Easily Orlando City versus NYCFC, because I think this is maybe the only meeting in the first round where I could talk myself into either of these teams actually winning the whole damn thing. Like, we know Orlando City, what they did this summer when they were mostly healthy, and that was before Daryl DK had established himself as a top caliber starting center forward. So I don't know if Ja Moutinho is going to be back, but other than that, they should have their best 11. This is a really good team. This is a team that can make a run all the way to the final, maybe even win a cup. NYCFC have been super inconsistent under Ronnie Dyla this year, way less compelling to watch than the last couple of years under Domi Turan and then Patrick Vieira. At the same time, they're still a really good defensive team. And now with that central midfield of Maxi Morales, Keaton Parks, and Alex Ring all playing in their correct positions, all working together, and then you have in Tinnerholm on one side and Matarita on the other side, this three-man midfield suddenly becomes a five-man midfield. All those guys can ball. All of them can pass. They could get on the ball and just dominate the game and pull you apart. So it almost doesn't matter. Like, Tati Castellanos is not a clinical goal scorer. He was a player of the month in October because they were giving this man layups every single game. So it's a stretch to imagine NYCFC winning it. But then you watch the way they've played down the stretch, and it's actually plausible. So I think these are two teams like this. Again, this is the only game I see on this first round schedule that pits two teams who I could see winning the whole thing against each other. And the fact that they both are capable of playing really beautiful soccer. And then for the U.S. national team angle, guys like Keaton Parks, Daryl DK, Chris Mueller, if you're a neutral who watches MLS because you want to monitor potential U.S. national team players, that's your angle as well. So this one kind of clicked. It hits all the boxes for me.
Bummer in that sense that James Sands is out for the year.
Very much
that
so.
That would be another nice player to watch in that sense. Dave, what do you got? Like, look, if we're going to talk about teams winning it, Minnesota, Colorado will be the pick, right? I mean, you're going to go Loons. And sorry. I can't resist anymore. I can't resist.
I'm going with FC Dallas, Portland Timbers. I agree with Doyle. I think it's unlikely that you would say the Timbers can win it, but they're third in the West. Jeremy Obobese, it sounds like he's back. They won't have Mora and Polo for this game, but Obobese should be the starter with Nish going out anyway at center forward. And then you've got Valeri and Char. So at some
point... Wait. And playoff Dairon.
And playoff Dairon, of course.
Okay, thank you. Yeah.
So at some point in going into every matchup, Portland Timbers can win against any team in MLS. And I think the MLS's back tournament, while they don't have Blanco for this, has a little bit of, we have this experience. We can win in one-off games. We know what we need to do. And I think they're actually at their best because they don't feel any need to play out until they can sit into a block when they're better defensively and hit on the counter. And then the flip side for FC Dallas, you saw what happened last year in the playoffs. It was maybe the most exciting game of the postseason. Their loss on the road to Seattle. They've picked up Ricuarte. They've picked up Jara. Brian Reynolds is playing fantastic. Is this a step for this team? And some of the young guys haven't played as well this year. Some of the young guys aren't getting playing time anymore as well. There's a lot of questions for Luchi Gonzalez, but I had Ryan Hollingshead in my best 11. The way those fullbacks play is unique and different than the way anyone else in MLS plays, and there's quality on the field. So I think this is going to be a great matchup. And when I look at the playoffs, I want to see what even. I want to see teams that can go at each other, and it's not a team blowing another team out, because I think they're going to win MLS Cup, and that's what I see in this one.
It's the classic FC Dallas sort of like trope from the last couple of years, and their fans will tell you this all the time. They play to the level of their competition, and so maybe this is the time. Maybe sort of the inconsistencies in the back and forth of the regular season for them starts to go away when the urgency is there. Who you taking, Kalen? What do you got?
Well, I like Goss's pick, actually. I think that one's like, it's kind of the sneaky good pick. Just kind of like you thought that Dallas, Seattle last year was going to be pretty straightforward, and then Dallas proved that it was anything but.
Kalen, you see my Montreal jersey? Stay hipster. Stay sneaky.
Ooh, I like it. I'm going with Columbus and Red Bull. I just think we've seen that. Well, first of all, just two very contrasting styles, which I think always makes for a really interesting matchup in the playoffs, because you get a test of seeing, okay, well, does Columbus decide to really try and stick to the way that they play? Or do you adjust when you play against the Red Bull? We've seen in the past, even in the playoffs between these two teams, that like first, what was it, 19-second goal that Justin Miram scored, where they just play the long ball up top, knock it down from Kai, and it really put New York basically on their heels throughout, and then Columbus goes on to host MLS Cup. So I think, you know, the contrasting styles make it really interesting. And then Columbus, I think, is an interesting one too, because I still think they could go to MLS Cup and potentially win it. And for a long period of time, we were talking of them being the best team in MLS for consistently throughout the season, and then just sort of hit a run of form where they weren't really playing well, and then also a lot of injuries. I think that was the main thing. So they're rounding into health, and I think this little break will give them a time to get going. And then Red Bull is always there. It's just Red Bull. It's like they could lose a manager, they could figure things out, but just I think the way they play, it's never going to be easy for you. So they've got the two, you know, Barlow and White just kind of smashing things up top, and in playoffs that can be tough. So I'm going, I think that's the match I'm looking forward to.
Double Bash Brothers, because the guys up top and then the guys in back have like the worst haircuts ever. And Aaron Long and Parker. I mean, what they've done with the mains is, it depends on your perspective. It's either offensive or inspirational.
Wait a minute, Weeby, both. Take off your hat.
Shut the world up.
You got I don't have a lot of room to talk here. I don't know, you know, get a little product in there. I think we'd be okay. I'm going to go with Sporting KC San Jose to start, but just because I want to see Kansas City and San Jose try to figure this out on the fly, which I think both kind of are doing. Kansas City, in the sense you heard Peter Vermees, they are missing arguably their two most impactful attacking players. You probably throw Johnny Russell up into that mix, but without Pulido, without Gadi Kinda, potentially, it seems like Polito's for sure out. Gadi Kinda maybe could get back for this one. Like, that changes who they are and what they do and what their ceiling is, realistically. I don't think they are an MLS Cup contender. They're a possibility without Alan Pulido, but they got to get through this and see if they can get him back. So I would start there, and then any game you can watch San Jose. Come on. Give me some of the spray in the air for this, Mateus Almeida. Hook up your training staff. Just cans upon cans in the training bags. Distribute it along the sidelines. Have the ball boys hand it out anytime a goal is scored. I mean, I need to see the wild and crazy San Jose, not sort of the like effective San Jose, to be honest with you. I want the entertainment version.
Okay, really, are you going through a drive to the drive-through watch party since you're out west?
Yeah. Roll down to
Hawaii. Maybe. I want to see you out of the sunroof.
Live reporting?
Yeah. Wow. It sounded a lot like when I used to invite Kalen out, and he'd be like, for sure. Let me know where you're going to be. Maybe. Yeah, for sure.
It'd be tough to get on the post-game show from there.
From the biggest outdoor bar? Come on, Kalen.
Dude, actually, from the Lobina?
Okay, stop. Really good, Weeby, I want to ask you this. Is there anything Sporting Kansas City can, and I'm going to open it up to you two guys as well. Is there anything Sporting Kansas City can do in this game that will convince you they are a top tier favorite to win MLS Cup?
No,
there's nothing.
No.
I think there's something for Kansas City. Honestly, I think it just comes down to like feeling like, you know, what you're going to get from whether it's Ilya or Busio or otherwise. Basically, your back five. Like, Tim Melia, I know pretty well what I'm going to get from Tim Melia, but he's been put in a lot of really
difficult positions. Do you question Sporting KC right now?
I do question.
And why have you questioned them? Because of the opponents they've played. Is San Jose different than those opponents?
Yes and no. It really depends.
Can San Jose win MLS Cup?
It really depends on the San Jose you see, but probably not. probably San Jose.
So how is this different than what they've done over the last 6 weeks?
I mean, yeah, look, but every game's an opportunity to start to build the case that it is different, right? Like, they can't control their schedule. They never could control their schedule. So if we're just going to say you got to wait until the conference finals because they're going to take on Minnesota, Colorado if they
win. Which I think are two teams that could potentially, if healthy, push for MLS Cup. That's a legitimate matchup to me. San Jose is the one team in the West that I don't think has a chance at winning MLS Cup. So by beating them, they're continuing to do what they've done, which they need to do because it's a single elimination. But I don't think that proves they're different than who we thought they were a week ago.
That could be fair. And look, without Pulido, they will not be who they would be if they were going to MLS Cup as well. I really just want to see that back five. If they are consistent, if they sort of smother opportunities, it's not that San Jose creates a boatload of them, but there are times where they're pretty dangerous. If they can handle Espinoza, if they can really control the game and then exploit the weaknesses that San Jose just kind of leave open if they're not playing well, I will start to believe, and then it's just a matter of hitting a run. But the game I was really going to say is, come on, it's the expansion bowl. It's Nashville-Miami. I don't know that this game, if I'm honest, has entertainment value written all over it.
Not unless you like set pieces.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't know if it has that, but I do think it has a lot of storylines and narratives. And this is the game that I wanted to see in the play-in round. Two teams that like snuck in basically because this is a weird season. And Nashville should feel confident, but if Nashville lose at home to Miami in this match, maybe this is the start of something for Gonzalo Higuain. Maybe this is the start of something for this Miami team that just hasn't ever really seemed to like grip the ground this year, but they don't have Rodolfo Pizarro. So maybe it's not. I don't know. That's the game I'm looking forward to. All the listings at MLSsoccer.com. There's also a pregame show, which I'm sure producer Chris Karen is out here just like pounding his desk saying, you guys spent 5 minutes just incoherently yelling about extra time the postgame show when there's the Audi 2020 MLS Cup playoffs pregame show before every single one of these match days. So go check that out on all the MLS channels as well. All right, go check out MLSsoccer.com for all the scheduled TV information and the coverage ahead of the matches starting on Friday with the play-in rounds in the Eastern Conference. Award season in full swing. That's the way these things work. As you move to crown the MLS Cup champion, you're also crowning individuals from the regular season. That was, remember, these are the official awards that we're going to talk about. They're cool and they're great and they're sponsored and stuff, but they're not as cool as the Continental Awards that we've made up out of thin air and are the unofficially official awards of the MLS award season. You can watch the full, and we're going to record it here in like, I mean, an hour. We're going to record this thing. It's going to be on the Continental YouTube channel and celebratingsoccer.com for about a week, and then we will release it as a podcast as well as on our YouTube channel. Big news this year. I don't know who here knows about this. We've done a lot of work behind the scenes. It used to be that we would just do this show and say who the winner was, and then it was over. That was it. We'd wear like our tuxedo t-shirts and it was kind of, you know, tongue in cheek and a little bit stupid, but now it's official. It's officially unofficial. We are giving a set of tires to every single one of the winners, courtesy of Continental Tire. And
wow.
And even
I did not know this. That's yes, big.
Huge.
Kalen's like, how do I get on an award?
I had just shipped my car. I have a nail in my car, in my front right tire right now. So anyway, we'll talk about this later, but
okay. All right. Okay. If anybody's getting free tires, I'm jumping in first. I'm just going to say that. The other thing is, and this is the real prize because this lasts forever, we are going to get a plaque for every single one of the winners that they can proudly display on their mantle. You know, it's like not that nice of a plaque, but it's a plaque that officially commemorates their Continental Award winner for the year 2020. It's going to be a beautiful thing. We will present them to people, and then I want to see their reactions when they're handed this nondescript plaque and a coupon for free tires, and just see what they do, how they feel, whether it's like, you know, the crowning achievement of their lives or just something to like throw in the back of their car.
Is there a chance that you actually don't take the tires and put them on the car? Maybe you actually just put them up on the mantle itself.
Fair. Ooh. Or stack them in the corner of your living room. Them.
It's like the new Timbers slice of the log.
Right.
I was thinking more like a post-apocalyptic cyberpunk sort of shrine, but like, yeah. Slice of the log works too.
Yeah, you know, you could make a little side table out of it. You know, if you like the smell of rubber in your living room, whatever you want to do with it. But the Continental Awards are big time. They're legit this year. Let's talk about the comeback player of the year won by Bradley Wright Phillips. BWP got 39.99% of the vote. He was far ahead of Kevin Molino. Hot boy for life. Milton Valenzuela was right there. Florian Vallot down, though, that's where my vote went. So I was one of, what, let's see, 8.99% of the media that went there. But BWP is the choice. Doyle, how do you feel about this one? I think you called it.
Yeah, I called it. I thought it was pretty obvious that if he was going to be fit, he was going to be awesome for this team, whether or not they were as a whole fit. And we know that they spent most of this year injured to one degree or another. But he, BWP, well, I got an ambulance going.
Yeah. Outside. So what's that indicate? You know, normally in ETR lore, when there's a competing noise, it means that like there might be some facts being left out, or I don't know, somebody might be BSing. Who did you vote for? Who was on your ballot?
I voted for Kevin Molino because I thought Molino was actually more integral to what Minnesota did than what BWP did. But BWP is born to be like a second fiddle or a third fiddle, just playing like a super cerebral center forward role. And that's what he got to do for this LAFC team. He didn't have to be the best player. It wasn't all on him every single game, as it felt like it was for years and years for the Red Bulls. So I'm really like, he was second on my ballot. I went for Kevin Molino though, because time after time after time this year, Molino had to be the best player for Minnesota United, and he was.
Wait, do you vote comeback player based on who played better after they came back?
As part of it.
Got it.
Yeah, this part of it. Like I always vote for someone who's coming back from an injury.
Yes.
Both these guys were. And then did they play better? What was their role? How badly did their team need them? And I think in most years, all four of these guys would have a really good case to win this thing. It was tough to leave Florian Vallot off. He came back from two straight ACL injuries, and he's one of the best pressing players in the league. He's a, you know, above average, at the very least, attacking player as well. And we all know, like, I don't think Milton Valenzuela is quite back to the level he was in 2018. So I didn't even really consider him, but he's still one of the better left backs in the league as well.
Yeah, I wanted to just throw out there, and I've done it over and over, it's just something he deserves it. And Winston Reid, because the guy thought he was going to lose his career. He thought it was over for him. And most people did. Like, the Sporting KC loan was just sort of a, hey, maybe you'll get on the field again. Maybe this will work. And he looks like the starting center back for Sporting Kansas City. Now, we'll see how that works out in the playoffs. But he's been pretty good so far. A couple Player of the Week awards, I believe. Or Team of the Week, I should say, awards. So, congratulations to all these guys. It's a massive, massive thing to come back from injury and succeed. I love the BWP seem to be very honored and happy about getting this award. So that was nice.
The fact that you guys have not come to my opinion on this award and it's taken this long is so disrespectful. I can't even begin to tell you. If any of you have had multiple ACLs, including if you had less than 5 knee surgeries in your life, you should not be eligible to even speak on this award. Okay?
What do you think this award means to the players?
Can I just say the reason I was asking Doyle?
I was never healthy long enough to be eligible for this award.
Galen never actually came back. He just petered around.
I'm coming back.
I just thought in my head, it's the who has overcome the most, not who came back and then played. Like, I totally understand Doyle's thought process, but it moved into like who came back and then who was MVP in this conversation.
Mine's two intersecting lines, and whoever intersects at the highest point, which is the most that they came back from and the better they played. My graph's all over the lines here. I don't know how to do it, but that's how I thought about it. And I thought
your lines are like Kalen's knees. There,
yes, they just don't fit together. They fall apart. And nobody can explain it. Even science, mathematics can't fix it.
Well. Some of the science staff, some of the staff, I would look at some of the clubs where these guys are coming back, because I think that that can be revealing at times. But I think you're right. I actually ended up voting for BWP in this one, although it's just difficult. I find it very difficult to vote for these awards because it's like who, especially when it comes to like comeback or humanitarian, it just feels like just really difficult to rank people. But well, I feel terrible about it.
The point of being a good person is to win. So everyone wants to be the best person to win.
Yeah. Who's had it the worst?
Yeah.
And when I think of who's had it the worst, I really think of Florian Vallot in this case. And just like, I know going through ACLs, how hard that is. And then he came back and looked good and then got hurt immediately again and then came back. And to pick up that, like, to pick up the way that he did in this amount of time, as far as his form goes, it generally takes, I always say, even you look at guys like Jordan Morris, I mean, it takes time for guys to come back and find their footing and find their confidence. And then, especially when you've done it twice, psychologically, how damaging that is to be able to really fully trust your knee again and know that it's not going to just give out on you, or you can go into a tackle again. And especially playing in a system the way the Red Bulls do and the way that he plays within that system, I think he's been one of the best players for that team all year, almost one of their MVPs if you were to go through for the club and how they've done. So although I feel terrible not voting for him, I definitely want to give a shout out to Florent.
Can I just railroad this real quick and ask a question? When you have an ACL or a long-term injury like that, whatever term you want to use, to come back in preseason and like come back in preseason with the team, or come back during the season and go straight into games?
No, mentally. Preseason. Yeah, if you can time it that way. And I think that's where Jordan actually had some success, where he was healthy near the end of the year, but he didn't play and he was training and then had a full preseason. And then that's why you almost didn't see some of those growing pains with him. He was able to just kind of like hit the ground relatively running. But I just remember that I did my ACL once, and then the second time I did it, how much harder it was, because you know how hard the rehab is. The first time you sort of just go in, you don't even really know. You're just figuring it out. But to do it back to back without a break or any joy in between, I mean, that is insanely hard, not just physically, but mentally as well.
Absolutely. All these guys deserve the plaudits. Only one can. BWP gets it this year.
I do like the idea of Continental Awards next year, best training, best medical staff.
Ooh. Yeah.
Voted and nominated.
Yeah, see, there you go. There's a hole in the process that we can fill. Absolutely. On the newcomer of the year, a lot of good candidates here. Lucas Zelarayán wins, and he wins by, if I'm doing like a little bit more than 1%. Robert Berich right behind. Alan Pulido, half of what they got, but Pulido was injured most of the year. I think if Pulido's healthy all year, he is the winner in this category. So 21.3% of the vote for Lucas Zelarayán. He really won this in the player vote. Got 23% there, whereas Robert Berich really made it up in the media side of the vote. I know I voted for Robert Berich. I just thought that he elevated a team that without him would have been much lower than they were, which, to be fair, wasn't particularly high. Sorry, Chicago Fire. But I think this is absolutely fair. Lucas Zelarayán came in and established very quickly that he was one of the most productive, explosive, and just sort of like able to impact the game consistently in the final third tens in the entire league. So I thought this one was fair. Nothing surprising to me about the newcomer of the year. Any deep thoughts on this one? Or are we going to move on to goalkeeper?
I would just say I think Antonio Carlos deserved a shout to be in the conversation for this one, for the way he helped out in Orlando, but that's kind of it. I agree. I think Zelarayán also, like, those highlights matter to some people.
Yeah.
Not saying that, like, they don't watch the games. It just sticks in your head. So I think the free kick down in Orlando and, like, the moments he's had when he's been healthy stand out to people in voting.
Six goals, 4 assists in about 1,100 minutes for Zelarayán. I mean, that's newcomer of the year worthy most seasons, including this one. I don't think it's a scandal that he won it. He wasn't in my top two, though. I did vote Berich because he not only was super productive, I think he was second in the Golden Boot race, 12 goals, 1 assist, played just about every minute, but also what he does in terms of allowing Chicago to play over the press, to link the midfield to the attack, to allow them to throw different looks at people. He was so key to everything that team did, and I love to watch him. And the Fire were one of the more entertaining attacking teams in the league, I think in large part because of him. But my second pick didn't even make the top three. It was actually Jose Martinez. One of the big questions going into this, there were two big questions going into the season for Philly. One was, could they actually continue to progress if Ilsenio comes back down to earth and isn't spectacular? And Ilsenio was not spectacular this year, but they were a better team overall. They answered that one. The other one was, can they replace Aris Medunian? And it's, you know, obviously you can replace him defensively. I think you could throw one of us out there and probably get about 85% of what Aris Medunian.
Okay, maybe on that side. Okay, yeah. I was gonna say, you're going too far here, and then I picked up what you're putting down.
But like, Jose Martinez was such an upgrade defensively, but then he was also a really, really, really good ball mover as well, especially in transition. And if you look at the numbers for Philly in transition, they were lethal. And a lot of it came because Jose Martinez was able to do the very simple or sometimes very complex, get out of trouble, get on the run, find the attack, and put him into the final third. So I think he, like, He's very overlooked right here.
Can I just ask a quick question on this? Because I've struggled with this in voting and in a lot of places with Jose Martinez. Best 11, and we'll get to it on our award show, the Chris Armas D-Mid of the Year as well. He did only is not the right word. He played 14 games in the regular season for the Union. So he played just over half of the available games for them. So he was incredibly impactful. We know in the playoffs when he's available what he's able to do. In some ways, I think whether it was intentional or otherwise, gave other players preference, let's say, just because they had more of an impact, I thought, because they played more games. Was that unfair of me?
No, I mean, that's a decision I made for best 11 as well. But he played 100 more minutes than Lucas Elorayan did.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah, that's why I voted Berch.
Personally. And I would say, I understand it doesn't go down statistically, but you can't take away the MLS's back knockout game performances from him, which adds into what he did for the team and the factor that he was.
Yeah, it's absolutely fair. I think Zellerion wins this because the team is better. Columbus without Zellerion.
But again, I thought the biggest knock to me on Zellerion was the lack of games.
Yeah, I thought
he played to the same point with Martinez. But to Doyle's point, he had enough statistically and he showed when he was there why they missed him so much, which goes into, actually, we have a mailbag question about it. That weird, if you miss someone and they're really bad, are they really MVP type thing? Mm.
All right, we'll save that one for the mailbag. Andre Blake wins the All-State Goalkeeper of the Year for the second time in MLS history. He ran away with this one. 44% of the vote, more than 50% on media, almost 50% for club, 33% for player. Nobody else got more than 10% other than Eloy Room on the player vote. Matt Turner got second, Eloy Room third, Pedro Gaese fourth, and then Fry and Johnson finish it out. But this was Andre Blake's award. I expected this to be the case. Four others in MLS history have won the Goalkeeper of the Year twice. Andre Blake is the fifth. Who are those other four?
Kevin Hartman?
Nope.
Matt Rhys?
Nope.
Zach Thornton.
Zach Thornton, yes, for sure.
Zach Thornton is one. Fire and Chivas USA.
Pat Onstad?
Pat Onstad is one.
Joe Cannon?
Joe Cannon is one. He was the first to do it.
Jaime Pinedo, obviously.
No, not Pinedo, but you're on the right track there with Pinedo. There is a commonality that Pinedo has with the other player to win two.
Ricketts.
Yes, Donovan Ricketts.
Am I muted?
Oh, no. Dave said
I made it over you, Doyle.
He pulled your
eye. I'd be used to it by now.
So, congratulations to Andre Blake. He's also up for the CONCACAF Player of the Year in our Continental Awards, so I'm expecting him to get that one as well. But
so he gets insurance and tires. What a week for
Andre Blake. I didn't even think about that. He's just raking it in. His whole car, like all the car things are covered for Andre Blake. Well done to him. Diego Rossi
drag racing.
Wins the AT&T Young Player of the Year, the first time this award has been given out. He barely, and I mean barely, edged Brennan Aaronson.
Wait a minute, Weeby.
What?
Explain the difference in the parameters for Young Player of the Year versus 22 under 22.
Oh, boy. I was trying to just like breeze straight past that.
One is Diego Rossi can win, and the other one is.
Exactly. I believe that you had to be 22 or younger, which includes players that are 22 on the AT&T Young Player of the Year. And I think 22 under 22, by definition, you have to be under 22
by the end of the year.
And Diego Rossi is 22. So that is the difference here. Brennan Aaronson got the 22-22 shine, so that's dope for him.
So he's too old for the 22-22, but he wins the Young Player of the Year.
Correct.
Okay,
you've successfully deduced that.
Sponsored by AT&T.
Yes, and I'm.
So one is 22-22 is more of a. It's not an. Is it an? Is it more like an extra time unofficial official award?
No, I don't know. I think it's got something to it.
But I will say this: 22-22 specifically stated a portion of it is your projection of how good you think they will be. This is purely production. This is just
who had the best year. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. And Diego Rossi won the Audi Golden Boot. So, I mean, it makes sense. But he, let's see, if I'm going to do the math here, 0.23% is what he knocked Brennan Aaronson off by, which is not very much.
That's Gwinnett and Cobb County.
Put him over the top.
I don't know if they're going to recount this one or not.
Shout out to my friends in Pima County.
Yes. T-Town, baby. Tucson.
One thing that Brennan Aaronson has over him is a multi-million dollar transfer. Diego Rossi, we've been waiting on that for a little bit now.
No, he has one. Two LAFC.
He did it first. Wow. Jeez. Oh, boy. What do we think about this? All good here? I mean, to go down the list here, Daryl DK was next in IO, and then Mark McKenzie, Brian Rodriguez, and Cole Bassett down at the bottom. 1.88% of the player vote for Cole Bassett. So I feel like Sebastian Anderson and Sam Vines and all the homegrowns on the Rapids banded together and got their boy some votes.
Maybe that guy Steve Zakuani as well.
So Mark McKenzie came in behind Daryl DK and Io Akinola.
Yes.
Which is, for pure production this year.
I mean, in terms of like per minute productivity, Io was incredible. So was Cole Bassett. Brian Rodriguez was not incredible, but in terms of how well the team plays when he's on the field, you have to tip your hat. Daryl DK, I think, transformed a lot of what Orlando City can do. Mark McKenzie should have been second on this list. He was second on my list. He was arguably the best center back in the league this year for the best team in the league this year. You don't get that out of 22-year-olds all that often. He'll be going to a Champions League team soon enough as well. Defenders just don't get as much respect as attackers. That's why Kalen always refused to play sweeper. That's what it comes down to.
Look, you got to have the shine. You need to get the shine. That's what's up.
Kalen was angling his whole career. How do I get a comeback player?
To be fair, there's like, you know, make or break points in your life. And when you go train and hang out with Nicholas Bittner, you're never going to play defender after that. Are you kidding me? Why would you go to the other side of the field? Like, you got a man to emulate.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Things went downhill. Yeah, things didn't go great for Nick and I.
All right, it's an AT&T 5G call to the field. Steve Zakuani on. You read him at MLSsoccer.com. You watch and listen to him on the Sounders broadcast and everywhere else in between. I like the backdrop today, Steve. It's a new one. We're not in the living room anymore. This appears to be the dining room. Sorry, this is the formal living room, I believe.
Correct.
it's well appointed, sir. All right, let's talk about the
Steve, next time you come on, you got to go to someone else's house and have weedy guests and be like, nah, you're an idiot.
Yeah. Just give us the house tour via extra time. We'll wait until a couple rounds down the line in the playoffs. Okay. Let's jump right in. How wide open are these playoffs, in your opinion? Because I think that's the big question on everybody's mind, given what happened in MLS's back, given the fact that it's single elimination, given the fact that it's just a crazy year. Can anybody win this, or does it really come down to like 5-6 set teams?
It's going to come down to 5-6 set teams. Not everyone can win it. But of those 5 or 6 teams, I think it's very open because, yes, there's home field advantage. I was having this conversation the other day with one of friend of mine who still plays in the league. And he was saying just, you know, you take the fans away, you lose that part of it. But there's still an advantage not having to travel, stay in a hotel, just having your own routine at home. That was, I always found as a player, that was a big part of it for me. Just the comfort of being at home made a big difference. So you still get that advantage. But because you've lost the fans and that factor of it, I think anyone in this league can beat anyone on any given day. I think it does open it up. I just think there's a few teams who can't win 3 or 4 games on the bounce, and that narrows it down to the usual suspects. But from that group, I think it can go anywhere, honestly.
Who do you count as a usual suspect, as a team capable of that? We're talking Western Conference today, so I'm going to keep you in the West. Yeah. In the West, how big is that group actually in the West?
I think there's 4 definites. I think there's Sporting Kansas City, Seattle Sounders, Portland Timbers, and I'll put LAFC in there because I just think if they can get past Seattle and then get their full squad back, that's a dangerous team. I mean, as bad as they supposedly were this year, from what I remember, I think they were still either the top scorers or the second top scorers. They still scored a bunch of goals without Carlos Vela. So that's a very, very good team going forward still. And in the playoffs, they can, I think, beat anyone. So I think those 4 teams, Minnesota, I want to like Minnesota. I think they've had too many injuries. They've been up and down. I just don't see how they can get past any of those teams. So it's going to come from one of those 4 teams. Obviously, I like it to be Seattle. And I think the win of Seattle and LAFC has a great chance. But Portland's been great against Seattle this year. And we haven't actually seen Sporting Kansas City. So it's tough to know. But any Peter Vermees team that gets into the playoffs, I think, so is dangerous as well.
Let me actually, sorry, David. Portland's been great against Seattle this year, and it kind of speaks to what looks to me like Seattle's Achilles heel, which is if they go down early, and they have basically every game against the Timbers, if they go down early and they have to face a packed-in defense, all the Sounders do is cross it 40 times a game. Like, there's no plan B.
No, you're right. They struggle. And we spoke about that with them like early in the season because they'd lost only 2 games at one point or 3 games, and each of the losses, they had almost 70% of the ball, and they had a bunch of shots, but none on target, really. And so they struggle when teams, for whatever reason, when San Jose came to CenturyLink Field and wanted to go, you know, man for man all over the pitch against Jordan Morris, I couldn't believe it. That's a recipe for disaster. The Galaxy tried that. If you try and go toe-to-toe and try to outrun Jordan Morris, you just won't. So the Sounders kill you. Teams that have just come and sat back, deny the space, the Sounders struggle. They really, really do struggle because Jordan needs that space and then Nico needs people to run into the spaces. So you take away two of the biggest weapons. And when you're crossing the ball, as good as Ruy Diaz is in the box, he's not prolific in the air. And so he struggles with that. You have to find him. When you find him at feet in around the 18-yard box, I think outside of Martinez, he's probably the best in the league. But he's not great in the air. So they struggle with that. I would love to see them play two forwards at one time. Put Jordan up top with Ruy Diaz or throwing Will Bruin. I think that will help them in those games. But that's where the Timbers have the advantage. Portland knows how to play against Seattle, and they've made it really tough for the Sounders. Seattle don't score first against Portland, whether it's here or down in Portland. They'll probably lose. That's the fear against that team in particular.
Before they get there, though, it's LAFC. You brought it up. This was the big game last year. I think a lot of people remember it over even MLS Cup, how heavily favorite LAFC was, the upset, Spetzer, Bob, everyone, I don't know, Sebi Salazar, maybe that was the week before. It's all rolled into one at this point. Is there that bite to this game? What's the feeling, you know, emotionally around this rematch in the playoffs? And do you think LAFC tries to change what they do and sit back?
No, I don't think LAFC will change. I've seen them come up here multiple times now, and they always just go for it, no matter who's playing. And Seattle's favorites, because I think Seattle's the better team, honestly, between the two teams this year. I think Seattle's just the better team. I think going into the game last year, Sounders had nothing to lose. Everyone thought LAFC is going to win. Sounders had a very good game plan, sat back, hit him on the counter, and really caught LAFC off guard. You know, I don't know exactly what's going to happen with Rossi and Rodriguez. I think if they don't play, I don't see how LAFC can beat the Sounders. I know Carlos Vela's back, but just by himself, I don't know how fit he is. Sounders have been pretty good defensively, actually. I think you need Rossi and Rodriguez. I know Rodriguez doesn't score a ton, but he's so dangerous the way he plays, and he unbalances teams. And then Rossi, he's a monster on the other side. And obviously, Carlos Vela is the best player in the league. So without his two mates alongside him, and I love, you know, BWP, I don't think they have enough to trouble the Sounders. And that back line is just too suspect. I don't know that they can stop Morris, Ladero, Ruy Diaz, that combination. I just don't see LAFC stopping this Sounders team. And if Seattle gets up early on LAFC, I think it's going to be a long day for them. And in goal, they've struggled all year as well. So I think that's what's going to be their undoing. I think it's two heavyweights going toe-to-toe. I would love to see both of their full teams going at it, because then it's a game. But with the injuries they have, the guys they're missing on international break, coming up to Seattle, a pretty good Seattle team this year, actually, I have a hard time seeing LAFC beating the Sounders.
So in this matchup, we all know the phrase, the better than Bob, and that's sort of like, you know, it's in our intro. It's rung down through MLS history here. But in one way, Bob Bradley outside the playoff matchup is feeling a lot better. That's because he has some stability, some security in his contract. Brian Schmetzer has got the front page of the Seattle Times. I mean, this is a thing. This is a guy who's won MLS Cups. He's all Seattle. I can't even imagine him being elsewhere. And yet, as they prepare to make a playoff run, to go back to maybe where they've been before, he doesn't have that security. What the heck's going on here, Steve?
Yeah, I think that's not good. I honestly think that it's a thing that I think, you know, obviously from the club and people around it, you can maybe downplay it and say, you know, we're going to get something done. But this should have been done a long time ago. He is, nice Doyle.
here comes the kitty cat.
He is Brian Schmetzer. His record speaks for itself. And for whatever reason, and you guys maybe can speak to this better than me, because outside of the Seattle bubble, I feel like he's not as respected or rated. You talk about the tacticians and these coaches and their philosophies, and different names come up, and he's pretty low down the list, even though, you know, he's fourth year, I think, this year, and he's been to three MLS Cups. He's won two of them. They're always pretty good in a regular season. They finish second in the West every year. He's very consistent, and his teams play good football. He tries to play the right way. He's had to manage through a lot. I mean, he's lost Clint Dempsey since he's been there. He lost Chad Marshall unexpectedly. He's lost Osvaldo Alonso. Brad Evans is gone. So he's lost some big, big icons for this club, and they keep going. And this 2020 team, even though I think on paper we've had better teams in Seattle before, in terms of the way it's constructed, especially getting Joao Paulo, for the first time we actually don't miss Ozzy as much as before, and Aiemo's been a slam dunk at the back, it might be the strongest top-to-bottom cohesive team he's had in a very tough year. And yet again, the Sounders are there again. You know, we've had this tradition of not ever missing the playoffs. And so you give him what he wants to me, because you know, you don't know what another coach will bring in that will be better than this. Because what is better than actually getting to MLS Cup and winning, which he's proven he can do and has a great chance to do again. So I think it's sad. I think for him and his staff, they're very good staff. And we hope it works itself out. He's the kind of guy, he's a professional. He won't, let it show and he won't talk about it much. But it has to be playing on his mind and the team's mind, because you don't know for next season what's going to happen.
If it's not him, is it Gonzalo Pineda? Is that the question for the front office, that Gonzalo's the next guy, but if he has to wait too long, he leaves? Or is this, they're looking at someone outside of the Sounders if Brian Schmetzer doesn't return?
Gonzo has a future as a head coach, that's for sure, as does Jimmy Traore. They do. And then let's not forget, Preki is there as well. So they've got a very good start.
That's good.
Do I think Gonzo would replace Schmetz right away? I don't think so. I don't, for my personal opinion, knowing kind of the dynamics, I don't think he would. I think that staff is very close. It's almost a case where I think if Brian Schmetzer goes, you could see the staff go. Yeah. And then the new guy who came in would, have his own people. I can see that happening more than only Brian Schmetzer leaving. But I really don't see Schmetzer leaving. I'd be shocked. He's a Seattle guy. Everyone knows the story. He's played for the Sounders. He's been here from day one. I think they're going to figure it out. I think he does have a good enough standing with the ownership. He's known him a very long time. I think when push comes to shove, between him and Goff and the ownership, they'll sit down and figure it out. It shouldn't have gone this long, but I do think he'll be the head coach next year.
We see the rumors and you see the talk and it's like, oh, maybe LA Galaxy. I'm like, there's just something inside of me that they just don't, I can't connect the two. It just doesn't work for me. In MLS though, it's Nico Lodero. And I think this is his team. We talk about this all the time, but I don't feel like we've ever really had someone come on and sort of explain it to us within the Seattle bubble, as you say. Tell me what Nico Lodero means to this team. Like the nitty gritty of the day to day, of the training field, of the locker room, of all these things. I mean, I think he's been their MVP for as long as he's been there, and he doesn't make best 11s, and he doesn't get some of that like league wide plaudit. Just help me understand what it's like there to be Nico Lodero.
Nico Lodero is going to go down, I think, as without question, a top 5 Sounders player of all time, probably top 3. And I'm putting only Osvaldo Alonso. Oba is the best, but he wasn't here maybe long enough. And then Chad Marshall's in that conversation. Nico's pushing those boundaries, and Stefan Frey will be up there as well. So here's the thing about this guy. He's a DP. You would never know it. You would never know it. When you go and watch training, and I trained with them last summer just to try and get in shape, and I've never seen anything like it. He doesn't stop running in training. The day after a game, when they come in to do a light session, a regen session, he wants to train with the reserves and the subs. He wants to, and they got to pull him off the pitch. And then he'll say, okay, no problem. I'm going to go up to the gym, go on the treadmill, put it to the highest speed and just run as long as he can run. And he'll just run and then he'll go home. So he hates not working. He doesn't take days off. On the day off, he's in there working with the massage therapist or something, or doing a gym workout. Nico doesn't like to rest. And his example, I think, is what rubs off on the guys. He's a very, very hard-working guy in training. And he's just fantastic. Like, Nico's such a good player. He's not like the typical number 10, because he likes to run all over the pitch and pick up the ball from everywhere. But he cares, man. Nico cares. And I know from speaking with him, like, he would do almost anything in his power to finish his career in Seattle. Like, I think he's found a home here. The fans love him. He loves the fans. If he can pick, I think he'd like to finish his career here in Seattle. I probably only put one other number 10 above him in the league, and that's probably Pozuelo, because I like Pozuelo a lot. I think he's got 2 feet, and every time I see him play, Pozuelo wows me. Nico, for me, is maybe now, because Valeri's on the way down slightly, as special as he is, maybe just picked Valeri. I don't know who else I take over Nico Lodero. There's just nothing he can't do. He's fantastic. He scores, he assists, he plays for the team, he trains really hard. He's worked super hard on his English. He can give the team talks before the games. In the locker room, he's vocal. He fights for the players, for the coaching staff. He's like the ideal DP that you'd want to have, who works hard and leads by example.
I just want to throw it out there real quick, Doyle. He does cover the most ground per game in the league. Yeah. And it's not by just a little bit. Yeah. It's by like almost a kilometer every single game. I only say that because it's measured in kilometers. I can't do the metrics standard in the top of my head, but whatever.
He works for his team 100%. He he is one of the best tens we've seen in this league ever. And there's a strong correlation between that and being an MLS Cup every year. I want to go back to the top of this interview. You listed off the teams in the Western Conference who you could see, the four teams you could see winning this thing. And you listed Sporting Kansas City, and we actually have had this debate on this show already, on this show, and then on previous shows as well. Sporting KC, they did a really good job in the regular season to collect points. They brought in some big players in midfield and up top, and they kind of readdressed the defense. But none of us are quite convinced that they're there yet. Are you convinced? And if not, is there anything they can do against San Jose in this opening round that would convince you that, yeah, this is an elite team? This is an alpha team in the West.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of them. It's hard to know just because we didn't see them play the Western Conference teams much. So Seattle hasn't seen them. So that was tough to know. But every time I've seen them, I've always said, and you know, there was a couple of fans that disagreed with me on this, but I love Johnny Russell. I think when he's at his absolute best, that's when I think they're super dangerous because he gives them a different dynamic that very few players can give any team in this league. So I like them. I think they're solid top to bottom. I am convinced about them, actually. I am convinced because I've seen them go through a little rough spell, but they found ways to get results. I didn't think they'd go to Salt Lake and win on the last day. When I saw them playing that game in the snow in that way and grind out the win to make sure they could stay on the top, I was like, okay, they can dig deep and win in that way as well. So I do think they're there. I think Seattle and Portland are the two best teams in the West. I think it is Seattle and Portland. I think they're just a touch above Sporting Kansas City, but I think Sporting Kansas City is above everybody else. And then LAFC is kind of an outlier because I just think on their day, they're still the best team. Like, if they really just have their best game, but they just haven't had it. So Sporting KC is high. I'm pretty high on them. I know we're not talking Eastern Conference, but the only teams that I think are better than these teams is probably Philadelphia and maybe Toronto when they're fit. But I think the West has still got the top two or three strongest teams.
I want to ask you about another question mark in the West to me, which is the Rapids, because they got thrown off so many games. They come back, they get smoked the first game, whatever. Then they put together a good string of results to close out the year and actually make the playoffs, even playing left games on points. Didn't even need points per game. You didn't mention them in your four that you feel strong about. From what you've seen since they've been back from the COVID-19 breakout in their team, do you think they're strong enough to make a run to MLS Cup? And how do you think they can hurt a Minnesota or a Sporting KC?
Without question, dude, I think this last year, ending the season, they were the hottest team in the league. I think even more than LAFC. And then they just didn't do enough to make it to the playoffs. And then this year, before their enforced break, they were on a run. They won 5-0. They won 4-0. They were finding their groove. They went with the youth movement. They sent Kai Kamara away and said, you know, we're going to really go with some of the younger players. And then when they came back, obviously, people forget, not only did they not play four or five games, they couldn't really even train. So there's just no way you can come in and start playing at your level again. But took them two games. Then the Sounders went up there and played them, and they tore the Sounders apart. The second half of that game, they absolutely took the Sounders apart. And I know we talk about Aronson, and he is fantastic. And then Caden Clark took some of the headlines. But Cole Bassett, for young players in this league, I mean, he's got a future. Like, he's fantastic. Every time I see him play, he looks assured. He knows where the goal is. He's confident. He tries things. I think this team is legit. I think they can defend well. They get out in transition quite well. I don't know that Rubio, I'm the biggest fan. I think if they had a guy that I knew every game, this guy's going to put the ball in the back of the net, I'd feel a bit better about them. But in terms of dark horses outside of that core group at the top, they're the ones that can make the most noise. I think they're going to beat Minnesota. I really think they're going to go into Minnesota. I think they're going to win that game. And it's going to just give them confidence. But yeah, they're a team that I didn't want to face. When there was a chance the Sounders might face them, I thought that would be a pretty bad draw because it's a good team. They're a good team.
And then interim, you get LAFC. They got so. LAFC. Yeah, we'll just see how that one goes. That's the entertainment value one. Before we let you go, Steve, will you share with us your MLS Cup matchup? Do you have your bracket filled out? Have you made your predictions? Are you still waiting around a little bit?
Yeah, I just for the sake of it, I would love to see Toronto, Seattle, but I don't.
Oh, God. For the sake of what?
I don't think we're going to, though. I think Philadelphia will be in MLS Cup, and I do think the Sounders will get there. I looked at this, it's a tough path for the Sounders. They've got to go through LAFC and then potentially Portland. I think if you do that, and get there. I think Seattle against Philly will be a great game. And if not Philly in the East, I think Columbus Crew will get there. But I like Philadelphia against the Sounders.
I like it too. That's what's in my bracket. Go fill it out. The Audi 2020 MLS Cup playoff bracket.
If it's Philly, Seattle, it'll be in Philly, and Obafemi Martins comes off the bench in extra time to win it. Just maybe, like the Open Cup. Classic, baby.
Love that.
All right, Steve. Thanks for your time, man. You can follow him on Twitter. He's got his stuff at MLSsoccer.com as well, which has been great all year, and on the Sounders broadcast too. Steve, thank you, man.
Guys, always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Big thanks to Steve Zakuani for joining us. Always a pleasure. It occurs to me that we missed an opportunity to ask him about Arsenal and connections therein, coming off the Nicholas Bittner laugh fest that we had.
He's probably got the Jack Wilshere news. Which of the four MLS teams he's going to?
Ooh, we haven't done that on this show. We're going to do the Luka Modric news here in just a little bit. That would be the LA Galaxy. Just to bring it up.
That's not a YouTube title.
Exactly. Why do you think we do this? Why do you think we put that in? Is there any validity to those rumors? No idea, but we're titling YouTube one way, baby.
Could Jack Wilshere and Luka Modric team up to win the World Cup in MLS?
Managed by Nicholas Bittner. And now we continue with the Western Conference today. We'll do the East and the play-in games on Thursday. Sporting KC, San Jose Earthquakes. That's the 1-8 matchup out in the Western Conference. It's nice, and you said this before, and I agree, Dave, that Saturday and Sunday are sort of broken up. You have the play-in games on Friday, and then the Eastern Conference goes again, two games on Saturday. Then it's three games out West on Saturday. Sporting KC, San Jose started off. Sunday? Set? Yeah. Okay, there's a lot of days going together. I mean, sorry. Somebody read a calendar.
And it's 2020, so every day is just the same day over and over.
It's the same.
I literally was like, oh, there's Friday night games? How does that affect my Friday night? Exactly. Oh, wait. It's the same as every other night.
It doesn't.
Was that different in 2019 for you?
MLS on Friday night.
Viernes football.
Exactly.
Everybody, you guys act like this has really disrupted us.
You're like, God, my social life is ruined.
I was going to drink this $12 bottle of Merlot. Now I'm just going to do that again.
4 p.m. Eastern on FS1, Sporting Kansas City, San Jose. If you look at sort of the biggest storyline, I think, that goes across the board in the play-ins in round one, it really is international absences and how that affects every team. It's relatively minimal for Sporting Kansas City and San Jose. Marcos Lopez, who did get on the field for Peru, is on international duty. You would assume he will not be available for Mateus Almeida. Sporting KC aren't missing nobody, but that's also because the guys that they would have been missing, Alan Pulido, Gadi Kinda, et cetera, are hurt. So I don't think it's a push there. I would ask this of you, Doyle. How much does it hurt Kansas City to miss Alan Pulido? We've talked to Peter Vermees about it. I've sort of mentioned it as my kind of lingering doubt with them. They do have Kyrie Shelton. They do have the island.
How would muscle this hamster. Them? The muscle hamster himself, Eric Hurtado. I mean, obviously, Eric Hurtado's per 90 goals per 90 this year is better than even Carlos Vela had last year. So, best striker in MLS history. Well, look, when Sporting
that's
Kansas
not
City
the YouTube at, title, sorry,
yeah, right. There you
go. But muscle hamster could work.
When Pulido plays, he's as much a playmaker as he is a center forward, and he's able to drop off that line, come into midfield, or even go out to the flank, and it creates positional overloads and dynamic overloads, and it opens up channels that over the course of the season when he's been out there, Sporting have gotten so good at hitting because they have guys like Johnny Russell, Kyrie Shelton, Gerso, and then Kingda or even Roger Espinosa bursting out of midfield and making those really aggressive north-south runs. When Pulido's not out there, they don't have that. Kyrie Shelton is, I think, a very good two-way winger in this league. He's not really a center forward. Hurtado has been super productive as a backup center forward this year, but he's purely a north-south guy. He doesn't do any link-up play. He doesn't really win anything in the air. He doesn't dictate things. They still have a good enough attack to put up three goals on just about anyone. They do. They've done a really great job of adding useful pieces and building depth. And Peter Vermees has... I mean, he's still one of the very best coaches in this league, and he has developed an attack that generates high-quality chances on the regular. But Pulido's a $10 million striker, and he's more than just a striker. And if you take away that little bit of magic in the playoffs, the margin gets that much thinner. I still think Sporting are pronounced favorites in this one, but I wouldn't bet my money on it. I'd bet some of yours, but I wouldn't I wouldn't bet my money on
so this. It's a low wager. It's a small bet. Not a lot of payoff for you if you're coming in for our pocketbooks here. I mean, look, Sporting Kansas City, part of getting the number one seed, I think, was a little bit of insurance. Not that they thought that this was going to happen to Pulido, but it's insurance for them because if they can win, they'll just do it at home and wait for Allen to come back. TBD. Who wants to make the case for how San Jose wins this game? Who feels strongly about that? Or who can just imagine that scenario in their mind? Okay, let's go to the guy who's going to be at the drive-in watch party at Avaya Stadium, Kalen Carr. Paint me the picture. How does San Jose win this match in the round one?
Well, I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. Because, I mean, I've been going on this for my relationship with San Jose has been an interesting one. It has been a tumultuous ride where all of MLS's back tournament, I basically just kind of railed against them, saying that, like, I mean, they played a 1-2 on top of their box and left an 80-yard breakaway going the other direction, and then came, like, I just, the way that they play and the risks that they take, I just cannot understand. And then when we've seen that happen, well, first of all, let's stay on the course here. Then they make this run right through all of that, and basically I ended up having to like apologize to San Jose fans for ever doubting their rise to the inevitable top. And then we all saw what happened, where it just completely fell off and then came back up again. So it's sort of the opposite of the Sporting Kansas City team, where Sporting, it's like, you know what you're going to get. And for every manager I've played for, or for every good team I've played for, you generally know where the floor is. The ceiling might go up a little bit, but the floor for the San Jose team is like crazy low. Like, they could lose this game to Sporting Kansas City 7-0, and it would be really not that big of a shock. But they could also win 4-3. They could do it, or it could be 0-0. They've played 0-0 matches as well. And so it's just, you never know what you're going to get with this team. So when you ask me to like make the case for them, I don't know which case even to make. I don't know which San Jose team it is, and it's impossible to tell. And that's why I would go on the other side, because what I know about playoffs and what I know about Peter Vermes is that the tried and true thing is it's a much safer bet.
It's a little bit like the peyote of playoff teams here. Oh, just boy. Don't know.
But you want to watch it, right? You do want to tune in. I want to see which way it could go either way. So that's why you have to tune in.
All right. Well, producer Anders and producer Chris, please let me know if that joke was appropriate or not. In the meantime,
I think it's legal if we're talking timbers, but only in Oregon.
Okay. We're not talking about anybody actually doing it. We're talking about like strictly academically what that might mean for a playoff team. Do we all, prediction wise?
Yeah.
I'm going Sporting Kansas City. I have my reputation riding on this. So,
yes.
Okay. Yeah. Perfect. All right. We're going to skip Seattle LAFC, and we mentioned why we would do that, because it is next week, so we have Monday to talk about that. Portland-Dallas. You got some missing guys here. Again, Peru, two guys from Peru, and I mispasted here. Actually, it's just one. It's Andy Polo. Nobody's missing from FC Dallas. Felipe Mora is also missing, potentially, on Chile duty for the Portland Timbers. I know that we sort of like question Polo from time to time for final third ability, but it seems like a guy that pops up every now and then and does a pretty good job when they need him to, when they maybe bunker and need structure and then have a couple guys who are special. Doyle's shaking his head no. Okay. Felipe Mora removes one of those center forwards that can fill in for Nijgoda, so it will be a Bobasi. What is the storyline of this game for you, Dave? What's the matchup to watch? What are you thinking about here?
Well, I already gave you my little pitch up at the top. For this one, but for Portland, I don't trust their defensive unit individually, but when they're able to pack it in, have Chara, potentially Paredes, depending on how they set up with all these injuries, maybe Valeri, quote unquote, plays wide, and you bring Williamson, Paredes, and Chara into this team, then they're solid defensively. And FC Dallas has struggled at times to break that down. Where does that attack come from? It either comes from a moment of brilliance from Ricuarte or the fullbacks, with Brian Reynolds coming in, being aggressive, and Ryan Hollingshead coming across the field and being an extra attacker. That's what Dallas has done at home when they've needed to break teams down that are bunkering against them. So it'll be interesting to see if that's the way this game plays out. That's my expectation, that Dallas tries to play aggressive and that Portland sits back and lets this game happen and tries to hit Dallas in transition. And for Dallas, this is that mental moment. Can you push numbers forward and not lose your guy? can you know where Valeri is and Char is when the turnover happens?
Portland's been killing people in transition since the moment Diego Valeri got there in 2013. It's been almost a decade of this. It's just a nightmare matchup for Dallas, even with Portland missing two DPs in Nijgoda and Blanco, even with Mora and Weeby's favorite player, Andy Polo, on international duty. Sure. If you're pushing both fullbacks up against this Portland team, you're going to give up a transition goal, at least one. And Dallas have had no way of consistently creating chances, let alone goals, if they're not taking kind of insane risks with their fullback. They still don't have a set best 11. They've been messing with their formation a little bit. It's kind of more of a 4-3-3 rather than a 4-2-3-1. Ricuarte has not looked like a match winner. He's still struggling to settle in.
Neither has Jara either.
Neither has Jara. I mean, Jara might not even be starting. It's been Ricardo Pepi down the stretch. So it's tough to see a path here for Dallas. Whereas with Portland, you know, Obobese back, I think he's better at center. I think he's the best center forward on the team. He's been playing out of position on the wing all year. We know that Jimmy Chara, after a tough start, has been massively productive down the stretch. They're thin on the wings, but that just means we get Dairon from the whistle, and we know that play on Dairon wins you games. And they still have Valeri, and they still have Chara, and they have Eric Williamson now. This is just such a dynamic team in that front six. I think you're overselling how good they are defensively. I think when they actually do pack it in, they give up a ton of chances, like good chances. But Steve Clark has been a match winner for them for 2 years. So the Timbers are prohibitive favorites in this one.
I'm going to say the most frustrating thing in the world to Dallas fans. Michael Barrios plays well, they could win. They've been waiting for Michael Barrios to play well and them to win for 4 years. And it's that's the scary part, right? That's what Jara was supposed to fix. And Ricuarte was like, here's some knowns. You've got some young guys, might be unknowns, but Mascara and Barrios get way too many minutes. And that's where Dallas is still at.
Anybody going upset special here? Or are we all going to go? You're going to go upset.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Give me the 10.
I just gave it to you.
That's the one that, what? That's what? You're saying Michael Barrios? That's the.
No. I'm not saying that. But I think that if they can score first and they don't have to throw numbers forward consistently, that's how they're able to keep Portland out of transition. And if you can do that, then Portland has nothing to create because Valeri doesn't feel comfortable in those moments. Not knocking Obobese anyway. The guy hasn't played in a month now. That's the guy that you're going to rely on.
Yeah.
And everyone else is someone who wants to play in transition or a defensive-based player. So that's the big knock. And the Barrios thing, while it's a joke, the biggest weakness for Portland is their fullbacks, both on both sides of the ball. So that is space to take advantage.
I mean, Barrios is no joke. He roasts people. It's the question of what happens.
He should have scored against Minnesota.
Well, yeah, there you go. Should have. But I love watching Michael Barrios play. Speaking of Minnesota, they're hosting the Colorado Rapids. Minnesota are missing a lot of players. And Colorado are just missing Diego Rubio, presumably. Robin Lode scored for Finland. Jan Gregu scored for Slovakia. Kai Kamara, 4-4 insanity for Sierra Leone with Nigeria. Go watch those highlights. Go watch the celebrations in the locker rooms afterward for Sierra Leone, and then Roman Mentner. So you're talking about, no matter how you, it was like 3.5-4 starters there for Adrian Heath for this home playoff game. Meanwhile, Colorado, they're on better form. They've got more momentum. They've been pretty good home and away this year. What do you see here, Kalen?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think a lot will, the one piece you'll be happy to see for Minnesota is Molino. And I think he's been, for me, like always, I think throughout the year, their most important player because he gives them something that he gives them some creativity or a moment that you might not expect. And he's also scored a bunch of goals. So I think Molino being there will help them. But I did pick Colorado to go through in this match. I think they've been in better form. I think when you look at the way their pieces are a little bit, they're a little bit more mobile. Bassett, I like the striker force, Shinyashiki. I think they've got some pretty good pieces that I think can cause Minnesota some trouble. And I just think when you're missing that many players, that's going to hurt Minnesota.
What do you think, Joe?
It's the absences, and it's not just the guys who are in international duty. Ozzie Alonso got hurt for the second time this year about a month ago. We don't know what sort of fitness he's going to have for this game. Ike Opara, probably not coming back, I have to imagine, at this point. No, I don't think
they just write that one off. That's not happening this year.
Hopefully 2021 comeback player of the year will be Ike Opara. Michael Boxall missed a couple of games down the stretch as well. He put in a lot of hard minutes this year. You don't know how he's going to do. That said, Minnesota are completely comfortable just bunkering in, and that will put a lot of pressure on a young and maybe over-aggressive and not all that great defensively Colorado team. So as improbable as it might seem from a team missing essentially seven starters, I do think that Minnesota are the favorites here, and I do expect them to advance.
Reynoso, Dave, what have you seen from him? Because when we did Newcomer of the Year and we had our votes and we did the Continental Awards, we had a lot of Minnesota fans saying, what the hell? Are you not paying attention? He does have seven assists this year, and that's been in pretty quick fashion for them.
Yeah, if you extrapolate it out for a full season, he's pushing the assist record.
It's not Eric Hurtado numbers, just to be clear. It's not Eric Hurtado.
And he's been great. He scored his first goal as well. He wants to get on the ball. He wants to link up with people. He wants to create. He's going to give an option for Kevin Molino to play off of if they have to play in transition, of a guy who can launch him. What'll be interesting is, to Doyle's point about Colorado, they struggle a lot on a direct ball straight down the middle when they first turn the ball over when they're attacking, and there's no speed up front for Colorado. So it's going to have to be Schoenfeld winning that ball and laying it off or flicking it on for a Finley or for Molino. And then Reynoso is going to sit underneath, and any ball he can get to fall to his feet, he can create. He's not in a place right now where he's Zellerion, Pasuelo, Ladero, where he can change the pace of the game and he's going to control the tempo of the game, but he can find his spots and create for this team in this one.
I'm going upset. I'm going quote unquote upset because it is the 4-5. I'm going road team. I think the Rapids win this. And it goes back to what you said, though. There's just too many players missing. Far too many players missing. And there's been too much inconsistency, let's call it, up top for Minnesota this year. So I'm going Colorado. Anybody breaking and going Minnesota?
I'll choose Minnesota as well.
Okay, we got Doyle in Minnesota. Where are you going, Kalen?
I've got Colorado.
All right, congratulations to the Loons for moving on to the conference semifinals. We will talk more about the U.S. national team on Thursday. They are playing right after we record this. I just want to say really touching stuff from both U.S. soccer and Fox Sports regarding Daryl Grove and the way that they honored him in that broadcast against Wales. Didn't get the goal, as you heard on this podcast. We're hoping for more today against Panama. We're looking to have Greg Berhalter on Thursday. TBD on that one. Follow us on Twitter at Extra Time. And I'll let you know if we do end up getting that one. There's also news. Greg Berhalter says they're trying to put another camp together this year in December. That would be for MLS-based players, you would think. Let's finish off here. Luka Modric to the Galaxy. Write that YouTube headline right now, producer Anders. Good move, bad move. Do we like it? The rumors out there say it would be the summer for a lot of money.
One of us has to say something.
I mean, does this make you feel anything? If you are a Galaxy fan and you heard this rumor, would you be would you be excited? Would you think this is a move in the right direction? There's been so many questions about just the overall like thrust of where they're going and how they're doing it.
If I was a Galaxy fan, I'd be worried. Not because Luka Modric's a bad player, but because you've seen the issues with the club over the last 4 or 5 years. If this is a move they make, then nothing has changed. So they've not learned anything from their mistakes. And it's, let's just get big names. Let's get people that want to come to LA. And it doesn't structurally fix any of the issues that they have. That's what my...
Yeah, but you're not going to... Let me just push back. You're not going to sign a DP center back. It's probably not a good use of your resources, right? I don't know. Sergio Ramos would be dope. But you're not going to do that. So if you have a guy who can't control the pace of the game, link the lines, and potentially be the best...
They had that last year in Jonathan Dos Santos.
Yeah, isn't that
Jonathan Dos Santos?
I think you would play Modric higher up the field, I think. Because you would look to keep Jonathan Dos Santos.
Okay. But you already had the stuff that you're describing. Like, that's not where the issue is with the Galaxy. The issue with the Galaxy this year was they weren't coached, number one. And number two, they still are just not a great team on that back line and in goal. And they have to fix those two things. And adding Luka Modric does not really address that. And then on top of it, if you want to look big picture, Modric, one of the best players of his generation at any position. Certainly, you know, one of the best central midfielders of the past 15 years. He's also 35. Do teams win MLS Cup or the Supporter Shield with players like that anymore?
Well, no, Weeby's pitch, though, is if you play him out of position, now he'll be better.
I didn't say
out of position. And he'll play even longer, so that's
anyone can play. Anyone can play left back. Yeah, sure. It would be a signing for the name, yeah. Not to say he can't do it on the field. For all we know, he'd walk in and be MVP. But
it could fit with another team where you're missing something that he brings. That's not, to Doyle's point, that's not what the Galaxy are missing at all. So it doesn't add anything for that.
Look, Weeby, you got us to talk about this.
Yeah, box checked. I don't agree that what he has, they have. I just don't agree with that. I think Dos Santos, Leggett, and him in a three-man central midfield would just...
Who's going to win the ball? Who's going
to
win the ball?
Yeah, that's fair. Fine. Whatever. They don't need to win it if they have it all the time, Doyle. Get us to the mailbag. Give us a couple good ones.
Yeah, that worked for the Galaxy this year. They'll just 4-1-2-0-6-0
MLS extra time at MLSsoccer.com.
Lukewarm take here from CM, who says... Walker Zimmerman should be the first name on the USMNT team sheet. What are your takes?
That's more than lukewarm. That's scalding hot. Maybe for the upcoming January camp, he could be the first name.
Who do you want to see next to John Brooks?
Today or
anytime in a world where we're playing a World Cup qualifying game.
I think if this is a perfect world and everybody hits their potential, then it's probably Mark McKenzie, maybe Chris Richards, one of those two guys. But Walker Zimmerman's been excellent this year, and I would not have any problem seeing Walker Zimmerman next to Brooks in a World Cup qualifier, especially because I think Brooks needs a really athletic partner, and that's what Walker Zimmerman is, super athletic.
Keep us rolling. Yeah. What do we got?
Joshua Young from Portland, now in Hong Kong, says, did anyone notice the Portland Timbers number 9, Felipe Mora, got the start for Chile going head-to-head against Seattle Sounders number 9, Raul Ruidíaz, for Peru in World Cup qualifying U.S. soccer and MLS, making its name known around the world. And then he went on to say he wished Andy Polo would come on and score a goal, Azo, as Weeby expects, for his now infamous goal celebration. So to jump on this, because I was watching international all weekend, and you see MLS guys pop up. We mentioned Gallese, Flores, former MLSer Yotun, all started for Peru. Carlos Grueso had a goal in a win for Ecuador at Bolivia, and Arriaga got the start. Almiron drew a PK for a 1-1 tie at Argentina. Casares and Felcher start for Venezuela. Gregus got the winner. Rasmus Schuler, who no longer plays in MLS, but did captain Finland in a win at France.
Love it.
Did Robin Lund get the goal in that one?
Robin Lund scored in the next game. He didn't play in the France game, unfortunately. And then some other stuff happened. Vaco scored and Pizarro played a little for Mexico. But come on, guys. MLS.
I mean,
that's the league of the future.
That's one of the most exciting things about this sort of time in MLS, I think, is the CONMEBOL presence that has really come to bear. Like, not just players that are on the fringes, but players that are playing big, important games for their countries. And I know it is. You know, it's still sort of like focused on certain nations, you know, Paraguay, or you're talking about, you know, Venezuela, for instance. And
but these are also nations who are having their best moments.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, it's awesome. It's awesome. Anything else before we got to go? I see we have a Hollingshead shout out here.
Yeah, but I wanted to do this MVP one because I call it the Peyton Manning MVP argument. But Will says, I had a thought while listening to discussions around league's MVP awards, as it appears there's no clear front runner. I'd be interested in hearing your thoughts on Joseph Martinez, as his absence from Atlanta United and their results without him speak volumes to his value in 2020. Stop. As a Union fan, if I had a vote, mine would go to the man, the myth, the legend we mortals call Andre Blake. But this, for your consideration.
That's the most Galaxy-brained freaking email we've ever gotten.
Most valuable player, not most productive. And what makes you more valuable than your team being terrible specifically because you are missing?
How many points?
Zlatan? Wouldn't Zlatan win it then?
He's in there.
That's true.
He's got the potential.
I guess Carlos Vela would be in for that as well. How many more points do you think, or do you like, where is Atlanta United in the standings if Joseph Martinez doesn't get hurt? Does Frank de Boer still have his job? I think, as producer Anders jumped in the chat here, I think they're definitely in the playoffs, but that's also because the bar in the Eastern Conference to make the playoffs is, like, you know, it's perilously low.
They're probably sixth or seventh in the East.
Yeah, it feels about right.
I think they might be higher.
I think they might be higher.
I think he's that good. He's gonna be top four.
Look at some of those teams in there. I think they're probably higher. TBD, we'll never know. We will know what goes down with the playoffs. We'll also talk about the U.S. national team on Thursday. Big thanks to Steve Zakwani, and thanks to you guys. We're out of here. We'll see you on Thursday, everybody. Adios.